regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. We're going to be spending some time with my friend Mark Walters, host of Armed American Radio, here in just a couple minutes, a wide-ranging conversation talking about the election. Both at the presidential level, what's going on in Montana, where gun control activist Ryan Bussey appears to be getting his butt kicked by Greg Gianforte, a new poll out showing Gianforte, not with a double-digit lead, but with a 22-point lead over the Democratic candidate. And we'll talk about the importance of this election and how we as Second Amendment advocates can talk about and inform our friends and family members, maybe even our fellow gun owners, about the anti-gun extremism that Kamala Harris has displayed throughout her political career. In fact, let's kick off this conversation with Mark Walters. Take a look and a listen. Mark, my rock star friend, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good, brother. We the people. How are you?
You know, I am excellent. I was just going over some poll numbers from the Montana governor's race where gun control advocate Ryan Bussey is getting his butt kicked by Greg Gianforte. And obviously, you know, you never count your chickens before their hats as a chicken owner. I know this. But I mean, a 22-point lead for Greg Gianforte in this New York Times Siena poll. Ryan Bussey is underperforming Kamala Harris. He's underperforming John Tester. You look at the crosstabs, the only age demographic that he is winning are 18 to 29-year-old voters. Everyone else going for Gianforte by double digits. The only part of Montana that Bussey is leading in is the Missoula area, home to the University of Montana. So it appears that, you know, Bussey is he's been trying to reinvent himself, right? He's not out there talking about his support for gun control laws. But I think the word is getting out regardless, Mark, because it seems like Montana voters have heard what Ryan Bussey is all about and they want no part of it.
Isn't this what we expect from Montana, Cam? This is something that, to me, it's a shock we're even talking about this in Montana. And those poll numbers that you're talking about, you and I were just talking before we started filming, 22% difference. And I'm hopeful that that might be indicative of what we're seeing or what the Harris campaign might be seeing internal polling themselves. And later in the conversation, I'll try to tie some of what we saw with the hurricane coverage back to that, because there are some similarities there. The hurricane guns, what does it have to do? Arguably nothing specifically with one another, but the way the campaigns are moving forward and the way they're presenting themselves, I have a sneaky feeling that the campaign polls, internal polls for Kamala Harris are pretty bad, or they wouldn't be doing what we're about ready to talk about.
I think that you're right. As for Montana, I mean, look, it has been turning red. But, you know, John Tester, Democrat incumbent senator, Steve Bullock was the last Democratic governor. That was, I think, what, 8 years ago? You know, but Harris is trailing, I think, by 17 in Montana in this New York Times Siena poll. So Trump's leading, I think, 57-40. Tim Shee, who's the Republican running for Senate in Montana, leads John Tester by 8, which is crucial, by the way, because that race could ultimately be the difference between, you know, a Republican-led Senate and a Democrat-led Senate next year. So, yeah, I think this is part of the trend. What's interesting to me, though, is that Bussey is, again, he's not even getting Kamala Harris levels of support, right? He's only, I think at 35% in this latest New York Times Siena poll. So there's something going on. I mean, obviously, it's very difficult for Democrats to win statewide in Montana right now, but there's something going on that is making Ryan Bussey even less palatable to Montana voters than some of the other Democrats on the ballot, which I think is interesting. And again, I think it is I think that it is his inability to shoot straight with Montana voters about his support for gun control.
He's running away from it now.
Yeah,
he's
absolutely
running away from it now. It, but that's where there's appears to be a disconnect with the Harris campaign versus Montana. Now, again, to me, it shocks me that we're talking about this with Montana. When I think of Montana, I think of rugged individualism. I think of this state should never be anything but red. And I mean deep red in double digit numbers. And here we are talking about this again. Montana's been a disappointment to me for many, many years. Probably has to you as well. Tester has played the game in Montana very well, but I think he's come to the end of his ropes. People are onto him. And you're right. This race is so important because the Senate hangs in the balance right now. And boy, I'll tell you, wouldn't it be nice to see Trump, House and Senate at one time? It would be a boon to gun owners. Thomas could get out. He could retire comfortably. Trump could fix the Supreme Court, shore it up. And of course, that's why the Democrats are fighting so hard the way they are to not happen. It's why they're not going to stop when it comes to Trump. What are we, 10 days into October? We haven't even seen the October surprises yet. Okay, so brace yourself for those.
Right.
But yeah, Montana's a really good picture of what's happening nationwide. And I'm hopeful that those poll numbers also reflect what Kamala Harris is seeing internally, which leads me back to that hurricane coverage from yesterday when I saw that 6-split screen desperately trying to make Kamala Harris appear to be presidential because the storm of the century, which wasn't, and I'm not downplaying the hurricane. I come from Florida, offered my home as a refuge to no fewer than 15 people to get out in advance of the storm. They're waking up to damage all over the place. Not downplaying the storm, but the coverage is always far more hysterical than the storm is, no matter what. They didn't do that during Helene. We see an opportunity with Milton. Let's do that. Let's put the split screen on. Let's talk about how bad it is. Let's give Kamala Harris an opportunity to get in front of people. And it flopped. It was so you could look through these people. You could see every organ in their body. But Kamala Harris, I believe that is very indicative of her internal polling numbers. And I'm hopeful that it's reflecting that in Montana as well. I hope there's a correlation here.
I think that there is. Mark Halperin said earlier this week, he was on a podcast and he was talking about some of the internal polling from the Harris campaign, showing her in danger of losing every swing state. And you look at some of the polls that came out just today from Real Clear Politics. And, you know, listen, I mean, all of these races in the swing states are really tight. But the Hill / Emerson had a number of polls, Trump by one in Pennsylvania, tied in Michigan, Trump by tied in Wisconsin, Trump by one in North Carolina, Trump by one in Georgia. Things seem to be moving towards Trump's way. I mean, again, I don't want any voters out there to think that this election is in the bag, but I think that there is this sense of growing panic. Politico's big story right now, as you and I are talking, are about Democrats afraid of turnout in Michigan. And so they're trying to, you know, boost turnout in the Detroit area for Kamala Harris. So, yeah, I don't think that they have this in the bag. And I think that, you know, part of this was Harris's late anointment and the media just refusing to really delve into her background, delve into her policy details. Right. It's all about the vibe. It's all about her biography. I don't think voters really care about that, Mark. They care about, you know, the kitchen table issues. They care about inflation. They care about whether they can put food on the table. They care about whether their rights are going to be protected. And exactly.
This is what they care about. This is what they're looking at. Let me tie this to a poll. I put a tweet out earlier today. I edited it a couple times. But here on the phone, you can't see this here. But I took a screen grab of two of my alerts today that came in. One from Fox News 48 minutes ago. Breaking news, inflation rises more than expected in September. Right below that, from CNN, breaking news, price increases slowed last month, new inflation data shows, marking a considerable downshift. Which one is it? Now, what that is disinformation from CNN, because the bottom line is inflation is 2.4% higher than it has been. Numbers are up under Kamala Harris and Biden, over 20.5% overall inflation numbers. You know that if you're going to the grocery store. And I am confident, I do have confidence in the American people that this is what they're going to vote. Go to the grocery store, guys, if you have any questions, right before you head to the voting booth, and you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. But Americans see that, the empty suit that she is, the lack of policy details that we see from her. I agree with you 100%. And if I look back at what I saw yesterday with that split screen and that desperate move to try to get her in front of Americans, that reeks to me that their internal polling, and I have talked to a couple folks in Washington, some analysts, who have told me that reeks of internal polling strife at the Harris campaign. And I don't want people to think this is in the bag either. But let's go back to some of the swing states. Let's go back to Pennsylvania. As you well know, a lot of gun owners. Now, I leave tomorrow for New York City to fly up to MC and speak at the Carr Firearms event, the Rod of Iron Festival, over the weekend in just a couple of days. I'll be up in Pennsylvania on the ground talking to people, and I can't wait to get there. She has lost the union vote in Pennsylvania. How do we know that? Because the unions are not supporting either candidate. That is supportive of Trump. That's saying we can't because union management supports Democrats. We can't say that because we know our rank and file are voting for Trump. That is a huge blow to the Harris campaign. When you compare that to what's happening in Michigan, You're talking about Michigan numbers. That is union vote related. UAW has, in fact, supported Kamala Harris publicly. Rank and file, likely going to vote the same way Pennsylvania swings. We know Ohio's likely in the bag for Trump. Wisconsin, right now, I'm seeing numbers Trump up as high as 4% in Wisconsin. Again, I don't like polls. They could swing either way. But if you give him Arizona, if you give him Nevada, if you give him Michigan, if you give him Pennsylvania, and you give him Wisconsin, Trump plus 312 electoral votes. Now, 2 weeks ago, I had the opportunity to sit down and interview the ranking judiciary member, Daryl Issa, at the Gun Rights Policy Conference. I gave him that number of 312. He looked right at the crowd and he said, I don't like to do this, but I'm going to. Mark is wrong. It will be Trump 277. Issa seemed pretty confident in a Trump victory at 277. Now, keeping in mind, he has a lead on a lot of these internal numbers that you and I don't.
Mm-hmm.
And he seemed pretty confident about that. He also made it very clear, and I want listeners to understand why you can't get complacent. Kamala Harris has made it clear she doesn't want to take anybody's guns. She's flip-flopped on just about every issue out there. When I asked Daryl Issa point blank, does she want my guns, even though she said her values haven't changed, he said that is exactly what she is saying. That's a wink and a nod to her base. Yes, I want your guns. My values haven't changed, but I don't want to take anybody's guns, but my values have changed. He made it clear that she will come for your guns, period.
Well, you know, another anecdote that points to that, Semaphore had a pretty lengthy piece yesterday. Shelby Talcott was the writer, and it was, Harrison and the politics of Glock, I think, or Glock politics. and Talcott actually reached out to the Harris campaign and said, does she still support a ban on handguns as she did when she was the district attorney in San Francisco? And according to Shelby Talcott, the campaign declined to respond on the record, which I think is interesting because it means that they said something off the record, right? Something that they did not want out there publicly. But Mark, how simple would it be for Kamala Harris or her campaign to say, no, she no longer supports a ban on handguns like she did when she was the district attorney? They could come up with some lie about she's evolved on the issue as a gun owner herself. She recognized, the politics that they could have said. They didn't. They couldn't even bring themselves to say, no, she no longer supports a ban on handguns. So if she's not willing to come out and explain herself, and she's clearly not, right? She has not detailed why she supposedly no longer believes in a mandatory buyback of so-called assault weapons. She won't explain why she supported a handgun ban in San Francisco and in Washington, D.C. And she refuses to say whether or not she thinks that would be a good idea today. Instead, she wants to talk about, her owning a gun. Mark, I don't know about you. I don't care, honestly, if Kamala Harris owns a gun or not. I don't care. It makes no difference to my life whatsoever. I know plenty of gun owners who I don't consider to be Second Amendment advocates. I know plenty of people who don't own guns who I do consider to be Second Amendment advocates. So owning a gun is not necessarily indicative of you protecting or even believing that there is a right to keep and bear arms.
Well, this is nothing but John Kerry in clothing with his tags on is what it is. If she comes out and says that, as well as I do, she loses a large part of her base. A large part of her base is being funded by Bloomberg money, Moms mm-hmm. Demand Action, every gun control group out there. We don't have enough time to name them all. Just put them all in a big bag of deplorables because that's what they are. She loses a huge part of that base and likely loses some funding if she says that. But again, that goes back to that wink and that nod that her values haven't changed. She's expecting her. So yeah, it absolutely would be very easy for her to say that if in fact that's what she believed. And I'm with you on Kamala Harris. I've said on my show multiple times, I hope she is a gun owner. She was a prosecutor. She has every right to own a gun. She doesn't have a right to take mine.
Absolutely. So, given that the Harris campaign, and look, I don't think these comments are designed to persuade people like you and I, right?
Yeah.
But they are designed, I think, to sort of soften up her image, right? To make, maybe that average gun owner who's not a member of the Second Amendment Foundation, they don't consider themselves to be a Second Amendment advocate, make them feel a little more comfortable, right, voting for Kamala Harris. So what is your advice to these Second Amendment advocates out there in terms of how they're talking? Because the media is not going to get this message out, right? So how do we get the message out to our friends, to our family members, to the folks at our range? How do we do that?
We continue to talk about it. You continue to use this platform. Obviously, I continue to use my platform. But to folks that don't have microphones in front of them, they need to get out and talk to their neighbors, the ones that they can. But yeah, I've got neighbors that are dyed-in-the-wool Democrats that call me for advice on handgun purchases. Those are fixable people in my book. And I've worked with them and talked with them because they're honest people. And that's the key. You have to be dealing with honest people. Dishonest people you can't have a conversation with ever. Walk away from them, including a family member. Just push them off. They're not going to be reachable. What we're talking about here, Cam, the country is evenly divided, basically 48-48. It is. You've got that camp that's going to vote D no matter what. You've got that camp that's going to vote R no matter what. One will never vote for the other. That leaves a 4% difference in the middle that we have to reach. And that's what Kamala Harris is doing. And by the way, as much as I hate to admit it, it's effective because she does reach that gun owner who says, well, you know, I don't like having to have a gun. I do have a gun. I'm a Democrat. Oh, she's a gun owner. Well, that makes me feel a little better about, and that's, I think, what you were describing. So we've got to get out and talk to those people on the street, any opportunity we can. Wear the t-shirt that says Second Amendment Foundation or Bud's Gun Shop. Somebody comments about my pro stuff. You know, right now I'm wearing a Gibson hat, I think, but I have a Second Amendment Foundation hat. When I'm out, put that on. People commenting about that gives you an opportunity to create a conversation with somebody. All right. Start that conversation, have that conversation, and do it. You can't get crazy when you're talking to people. You don't want to come off as an extremist, but make it very clear. Hey, you have every right not to own a firearm, but wouldn't you agree that I do have a right to own a firearm? But again, you have to deal with honest people. And sometimes that's tough to do, particularly as we get closer and closer to the election, because it's getting more heated out there every single day. And the media is seeing to it with garbage headlines like this and everything else with the disinformation. That's the administration's new buzzword is mis and disinformation. Yeah. So we'll use it too, right? A lot of disinformation out there when it comes to firearms. But what I found interesting in the scheme of things, Cam, is that the administration never did pivot, like you and I talked about before, as we got closer to the election. We generally tend to see, when it comes to gun control, this movement to the center that we have not seen. Maybe that was her idea of movement to the center, was bringing up the fact that she's a gun owner, mm-hmm. but going into any policy decisions or refusing to answer the questions you were referring to, that might be construed as her movement to the center. But again, it's with that wink. Okay, yeah. My views haven't changed. Why not come out and say, well, I've changed on this issue?
Well, yeah, listen, you said earlier we haven't seen the October surprise. Maybe that'll be the October surprise, right? Maybe the week before the election, Kamala comes out and says, actually, okay, yes, I do believe that there's an individual right to keep and bear arms. I was wrong back. I don't think that's going to be the October surprise, but stranger things have happened. And you talk about those Democrat neighbors of yours who are asking you for advice on gun purchases. You know, according to the Wall Street Journal, I think it was a Gallup survey, 29% of Democrats say that they are gun owners. That's the highest number that's been recorded in several decades. So I think after the election, this is something that, you know, we as Second Amendment advocates in the 2A community need to talk about, is outreach to that group of Democrats, because, frankly, our rights are more safe and more secure when both parties are invested in attracting the votes of gun owners, when both parties see that there's a political benefit to protecting and safeguarding the right to keep and bear arms. We're not there with the Democrat Party, unfortunately, but there are a growing number of Democrats who are at least exercising their Second Amendment rights. And I think that that does give us an opening. Again, now's not the time, but after the dust from the election has settled, I think that that's something that, you know, we need to be looking at going forward. How do we get that group of Democrat voters to start voting for their Second Amendment rights? Because I think that there is room there.
That's been something I've wrestled with for a long time. I'll give you an example. You got liberal gun groups out there. Mm-hmm. Great. I love that. To me, those people are fixable. But they try to focus specifically on the gun issue, yet they pull that lever or punch that Chad or tap that screen for the Democrat who they know wants to take your guns. So clearly the Second Amendment is not their deciding issue. To me, am I a single issue voter? You better believe it. very conservative on every other issue, but when it comes to my guns, I will vote my guns every single time, because that tends to go hand in hand with the other conservative issues that I support. They go hand in hand together. But when you've got those liberal gun groups, I've wrestled with this for a long time. I've had some good conversations with some members of those groups over the years. And here's the way I always leave it. You are not a Second Amendment advocate. You are not a gun rights advocate. You are simply a Democrat that loves your guns. And I have no problem with that. No problem with that at all. I believe you're fixable. But there are clearly other issues that you vote because you are still voting for that person that you know wants to take my guns. We don't have time to vote for Kamala Harris and then change her views on guns within the Democrat Party. That time does not exist. Kamala Harris is not going to change her view. Remember, her values haven't changed. So those people are, in fact, instilling someone in office with their vote, even though they're gun control or gun rights supporters, they're a part of the problem. And we've got to be honest about that. I have no problem telling them that. I love the fact that you're a Democrat that loves guns. I think you're fixable. But the fact that I'm saying you're fixable means I also think you're broken, because you're voting for the party that wants to take the very guns you're claiming to advocate for while voting, just standing there voting against it. I can't imagine doing that. I can't imagine saying, man, I'm an armed American radio host. I support my gun rights. I'll go to the mat on that. Well, but I don't like Donald Trump. He's got mean tweets. I'm going to vote for Kamala Harris, i.e. a Liz Cheney or a Dick Cheney, or any of the Lincoln projects, or anybody else suffering from TDS out there is on full display. Those people are not true conservatives. No true conservative, no true Second Amendment advocate would ever find themselves pulling the lever, pushing the button, touching the screen, poking the chat for someone that wants to take their guns. And we have to stand up to that. We have to make that very clear. But that goes to what you just said. That's for after the election. We can work with that after the election. The key is we've got to get Kamala Harris defeated and Donald Trump in office to secure and save our gun rights, because that will not happen with the Harris administration. We are in grave danger in this election of losing our gun rights. Cam, if the wrong thing happens in the House, 2 years in the Senate, we have a problem on our hands. We're going to lose the Supreme Court. The Democrats have made that clear. If Kamala Harris is in office, how much longer does Thomas have? Right. He wants out. I told me point blank, he wants out. How much longer do we have before that 6-3, 5-4 majority is kaput? And now we're watching cases like Vanderstock. Now we're watching cases like the Fourth Circuit assault weapons ban case. Maybe others that get to the Supreme Court flip the other way. We watch an overturn of Bruin, or just an ignoring of it altogether with subsequent decisions. These are very, very dangerous times for our guns. Now is not the time to be arguing that. Now is the time to get Trump in office. We can fix those fixable people later. But that's secondary as far as I'm concerned right now. It's all on the line, this election. It is literally all on the line.
Yeah, it is. Mark, listen, man, I appreciate you coming on the program, and thank you for everything that you're doing. Tell folks how they can check out Armed American Radio, either the Daily Defense or the Monster Cast.
Yeah, Monday through Friday, you can watch or listen to Armed American Radio every day at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 o'clock Pacific, by visiting armedamericanradio.com. Two little buttons up there for you, watch live or click live. Please don't click watch live if you're driving. We don't want you to do that. Listen to us, please. And every Sunday from 8 to 11 p.m. Eastern, 5 to 8 p.m. Pacific, on hundreds of stations. We've just added another 17 or 20 stations last month, including two more around New York, Albany, Santa Cruz, California. What's interesting, Cam, before we go, the majority of my new affiliates are coming in behind that blue wall. There is a huge appetite for this type of discussion I'm finding in states like New York, states like Illinois, states like California. That's a positive.
That's a huge positive. Mark Walters, always a pleasure, man, and look forward to doing this again very soon.
Likewise. Thanks, Cam. Have a great day.
You too. My thanks to Mark for joining us on the program. I will not be at the Rod of Iron Festival this weekend, by the way. I will be close, relatively speaking. My wife has her high school reunion in the Garden State, so I will be heading up there this weekend. Oh, joy. I am not looking forward to having to deal with New Jersey gun laws, even for 24 hours or so. Not happy about it, but, you know, the things we do for love. All right, on to today's Armed Citizen Story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. Let's start there. Now, I know that we had a story from CWB Chicago yesterday. I don't like to go back to that well too often because, honestly, there's stuff going on in Chicago that we could cover every day. But this one really was egregious for a couple of reasons. So let's take a look at the headline here. A 9-time felon armed with broken bottle robbed and threatened to kill a woman on the blue line, according to officials. All right, so we got a couple of things going on here, right? First of all, the nine-time felon in Illinois. How does somebody rack up nine felony charges and they're still out on the streets? But then the broken bottle that this nine-time felon allegedly used as a weapon on Chicago's blue line. Now, this is their, you know, elevated train system. This is the gun-free zone, one of the gun-free zones in the city of Chicago. Now, there is a federal lawsuit underway challenging that ban on lawful concealed carry on public transportation in Illinois, and a federal judge has granted an injunction against that law being enforced, at least when it comes to the named plaintiffs in that case. So this is not a ruling that applies statewide. It doesn't apply to everybody. But the four individuals who sued, the judge says, yes, you can carry. And that does open the door for, I think, all of us to be able to lawfully carry a concealed firearm on Chicago's buses and trains going forward. Now, the state of Illinois says, oh, that's terrible. Can you imagine what would happen? All of the Wild West shootouts that would ensue. Listen, crime is happening on a daily basis as it is in these gun-free zones. And yes, sometimes people are bringing guns illegally onto these trains and using them to commit crime. Sometimes it's fists and feet. And in this case, the case of 32-year-old Geronimo Espinoso, it apparently was a broken bottle that was the weapon of choice. According to CWB Chicago, Espinoso grabbed a 29-year-old woman's purse on a train near the Cicero, Illinois station back on September 24th. She fought back, not with a gun, but with her fists. And they fell to the floor of the train. Espinoso wound up on top of the victim, according to court filings. Wielding a broken bottle, he then took the woman's wallet while threatening to stab her with the broken glass if she didn't comply. And then he said he would kill her if she called police, according to prosecutors. The woman suffered lacerations during the struggle, but thankfully was not seriously injured. According to CWB Chicago, a CTA surveillance camera operator later recognized Espinoso when he returned to the Cicero train station. He jumped onto the train tracks when police showed up to arrest him. Officers pursued him on the tracks and took him into custody. Judge Shauna Bollacker cited Espinoso's extensive criminal history as one reason why she decided to grant the state's detention petition. Remember, under the Safety Act in Illinois, people who are arrested, even for violent offenses, the default is they get cut loose and they're told to show back up again in court when, you know, their next hearing takes place. The state can request, based on certain offenses, that individuals be held as a safety risk. There is no more cash bail, right? So again, the default is you get out. But under certain circumstances, you can be held as a public safety threat. And that's what the judge said here. In her order, she noted that Espinoso had nine felony convictions as well as four parole violations and had twice escaped from electronic monitoring. So the judge thankfully applied some common sense here and said, OK, you are a danger to the public based on your extensive criminal history. You're going to stay behind bars until your next hearing. Now, that doesn't mean, by the way, that he's not going to be cut loose and put back on electronic monitor at some point before his trial takes place or a plea bargain is offered. But for now, anyway, Espinoza, charged with armed robbery, is in the Cook County Detention Center and has provided us with yet another reason why lawful gun owners and those who possess a carry license in Illinois should not be prohibited from possessing a firearm on the crime-ridden public transit system in Chicago. Today's Armed Citizen story from Ohio. This is from the Columbus Dispatch. And again, the headline is very revealing here. One man arrested on Saturday after allegedly attempting to hit three people with his car. No mention of the defensive gun use that was involved in this case in the headline. No, no, no. For that, you actually have to read a little bit further into the story. The Columbus Dispatch reports that over the weekend, it was early Saturday morning, on the east side of the city, a man was arrested after allegedly trying to run over three people with his car following an argument. Columbus police say the argument took place at a home around 2 o'clock Saturday morning. According to a Columbus police report, 32-year-old Alexander Oglesby then drove his car onto the home's lawn in an attempt to hit three people. One of those three people was legally armed, drew his gun, or their gun, we don't know if it was a male or a woman, and then fired at Oglesby in self-defense, hitting Oglesby. Oglesby was taken to a nearby hospital for treatment, and then after he was released, he was charged with three counts of felonious assault, booked in the Franklin County Jail. The gun owner, who fired in self-defense, not facing any charges. And again, the self-defense aspect of this story just completely buried by the Columbus Dispatch. No inkling that a defensive gun use took place, at least if you're looking at the headlines there. Finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. Some good Samaritans in Houston, Texas, who came to the aid of a man whose semi had overturned and caught fire. The headline there, the camera captures two strangers saving the man. Here's the still footage from ABC 13 in Houston, Texas. And you can see those two individuals who've taken the driver of that semi out and have pulled him to safety at that point. We don't know the name of the Good Samaritan. ABC 13 talked with a woman named Dallinex Vargas, who was a bystander, basically. She and her three girls were there on the road in their car when they saw the accident happen. They saw the flames come out of that semi, and then they realized that somebody was on fire in the flames. She said that she had no idea what was even on fire when she first approached. She said, I got back in the car to move forward, and that's when I saw that they took him out of the fire. Two men in that video emerging from the black smoke with the victim's body. One using his shirt to put out the fire that was burning the lower half of the man, his torso and legs. Vargas had pulled up her car looking for a way to help that she said wouldn't put her kids at risk. She said the girl started looking for something like water in the car, so we gave him water so they could help put out the fire on his clothes. She said she was also worried about a possible language barrier, so she offered to translate. She walked up to the man. She asked if he spoke English. She said, I told him in Spanish that everything would be okay. Houston police say the man's semi rolled over and caught fire. They haven't said who was at fault or provided any details about other damaged cars at the scene, but Vargas says there was a pickup truck. There was a blue car that was also very messed up. No word right now on the status of that individual who was pulled from the flames. And again, we don't know the names of those Good Samaritans, but clearly they put themselves at risk to help a complete stranger and to save that stranger's life. So again, in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. Whoever those anonymous Good Samaritans are, I hope that we find out more information about them. But thank you for your very good deed. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program. As always, just a reminder, you know, we've talked a lot about our VIP and VIP Gold programs, but now we've got VIP Platinum from Town Hall Media. When you sign up and become a VIP Platinum member, not only do we get all of the benefits that come with a VIP or VIP Gold membership, the exclusive content, the ad-free experience, but you'll be able to contact your favorite Town Hall Media writers directly. When you become a Town Hall Platinum member, you will have access to a Town Hall TV and their library of conservative features, documentaries, and shows. You will also get a discount on the new Town Hall Media store. I've got my coffee mug on order. If you go to the store, you can order your own coffee mug, your Bearing Arms Cam and Company mug that says, be well, be safe, be free. I'm looking forward to getting that in my mail here in a couple of days. But if you sign up right now, you'll also get a $25 gift card for use in the Town Hall store. Just use the promo code FIGHT and you can get 60% off your VIP Platinum membership. Not only will you get a lot of great content, but you will be helping to support the independent pro-Second Amendment journalism that we're doing at Bearing Arms. We talked with Mark Walters about the media misinformation and the disinformation that's coming out when it comes to our Second Amendment rights. Well, there are some truth tellers out there. Mark is one of them. I think we are, too, at Bearing Arms. And if you want to support the work that we're doing, this is a great way to do so, while also getting some great content from the Town Hall Media family of websites, Town Hall, PJ Media, Hot Air, Twitchy, Red State. Again, just go to bearingarms.com/subscribe, use the promo code FIGHT, and get 60% off of your VIP Platinum membership. Hope that you have a fantastic weekend. Looking forward to seeing you back here on Monday. Until then, well, just do what the coffee mug says. Be well, be safe, and be free.